Welcome. You have found us. This is the Riot Underground, where we get to speak with the instigators that are out there changing the world with disruptive technologies. Really excited to have Marcus Amon in the booth with us today. Marcus, welcome to the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tom. I appreciate it.
Marcus is the CEO of Bailey, a company doing really interesting things in the automotive space, and I'll let him chat about that a little bit more in a moment. Before we begin, though, this is an audio broadcast, and we welcome all our listeners from listening in. Marcus, we love to give our audience a little bit of a visual as we get into these of who they're listening to. And so they're going to hear a little bit of your story, a little bit of Bailey's story, some of what you do, some of the journey you've been on as an entrepreneur. If the audience were to have a visual of who they're listening to, and you got to cast yourself in that story of your life down the road, who would you have play Marcus?
I don't look like this guy by any means, but I love every movie he's been in, especially The Wolf of Wall Street. Not that I would want to be the Wolf of Wall Street guy, but Leonardo DiCaprio. I love every movie that he's been in. And I would love for him to play me if there was ever a movie on my life.
Fantastic. I love it. We'll not go too far down the Wolf of Wall Street, but if there's a little bit of Wolf of Automotive in you, that's all right. And then, maybe at the end of Bailey, you'll have the big exit. You'll be standing on the top of the Titanic with the arms to the wind, leaning out into the future. We'll see how that goes. But anyway, thanks for being here. So first off, just tell our audience about Bailey and what you do.
Yeah, so at Bailey, we streamline lot management, reconditioning, and fix stops with automated vehicle and key tracking. And that really helps dealerships drive efficiency, boost sales, and CSI. So we have these sensors that go on vehicles that track them through the process using a technology called LoRaWAN. The sensors are Bluetooth low energy. So as the vehicles and keys or special tools or whatever asset that the dealership wants to track, as they move into different zones there at the dealership, the data is collected, timestamp pushed up to the cloud, and then notifications are sent to the end users, the employees there at the dealership, so they know what's going on at all times. And that really helps them kind of streamline efficiency, operations, and shows them where a lot of their bottlenecks exist.
One of the things that I'd like to dig into while we have you here in the studio is the importance as an entrepreneur to continue to, kind of both see into the future, but also to, follow where markets go. I first met you when you just founded your company. It was under a different name and a little bit different use case, but talk to us a little bit about the entrepreneurial journey and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah. So back in like 2017 or so, I was working as a fixed operations director for a dealer group, a huge group in North Carolina. They have about 103 stores. And in my time working there, I realized there was a lot of inefficiencies and problems that the systems they were using weren't fitting some of the needs that I had. They weren't collecting the data that I needed. I was trying to run a smoother operation. I was trying to find out, is it taking my technicians too long on cars, or is it, we're scheduling improperly or whatever it may be. So I started looking at things that I could do to drive in more revenue. And one of those things that I found was that consumers really liked pickup and delivery car repair. And this was in a time, 2017, where, that was kind of new to the market then. This is pre-COVID. So I started offering that to customers, without an application. And I realized pretty fast that my average ticket cost on those cars were about 30-40% more than they were when somebody drove in. So I said, man, this makes sense to, try to do as many of these as possible because we make more money when we do this. And, and it just made sense, if you pick up a customer's car from their job or from their house and you call them 2 hours later and say, hey, you need front brake pads on your car, They say, well, while you got it, go ahead and do it, as long as you can have it back to me by 3 or 4 o'clock or whatever, so that really helped us grow revenue there. And then I looked at how I could digitize that. So during COVID, this big thing came out called digital retailing for car dealerships, is where they could sell cars digitally through the website without having to come into the store. And that wasn't a thing that really existed until 2020. So we were doing the same thing except for service. It was digital service instead of digital retailing. We weren't selling cars, but we were connecting consumers to dealerships digitally so they could get their car service, remotely picked up and delivered back to them. And I took money out of my 401k and threw it all in, and I said, I'm going all in on this thing. And this was, pre-COVID still, of course, when we were building the technology. And then 2020 came, and we were doing about 150 or 160 a month pickups through the MVP version of the application we had built. And I said, this is, it's working here. It should work everywhere. I'd asked other dealers, and they said, yeah, sign us up. So I had applied to Riot, and when we got into that program, I said, if we get in, if they allow us, if they accept us, I'm quitting my job. I'm going all in on this thing. And one of my co-founders, Peter, he was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. He's like, it's a big risk, but let's try it. And I knew if I did not go for it, I would regret it my entire life. I didn't want to be one of those people sitting in a retirement home saying, man, I wish I would have done that, So I went for it, And wow, what a ride it's been, That was a product that got us to another point and has helped us get to where we're at today, But what you start out with is not always what it looks like, 2 years later, 3 years later. You just have to persist and keep moving forward.
It's really interesting because you've got this pretty easy to understand value proposition. And then suddenly you have a pandemic where people don't want to come face to face. They want to be contactless. You would think the conditions were actually perfect to scale a model that ultimately you moved away from. Help us understand that.
Yeah, we thought so too. And when I left the dealer, I left in February of 2020, and then the pandemic happened, or the United States pretty much shut down in March of 2020. That was not something I had anticipated for. when I left the dealership, and I was thinking, oh no, is now the game is on expert level mode hard, and I got to figure out how to navigate this. And then I said, well, this should help. This should help, right? Because now consumers aren't going to be coming in and sitting in lobbies. People are going to be weird about, going to meet people or be in person with other people. So this should help. And what we found is that, we didn't provide delivery drivers or pickup drivers. It was pretty much an appointment scheduling application for pickup and delivery. That's what our application was back then. The dealership started furloughing staff and letting people go, and there was a lot of uncertainty in automotive back then, even though it turned out to be one of the most profitable times of, or maybe the most profitable time that car dealers ever had, but they just didn't know that then. And when you're a startup, you can't hold on to an idea for a year if it's not working. You got to move on. You got to pivot if you have to. And it just didn't take off like we hoped. We did have several stores using the product and paying us, but there were so many other challenges standing in our way, like integrations. And at that time we were largely bootstrapped. We did not have capital to throw at some of these problems, like the integrations and things like that. So when we eventually raised capital, we had already seen the light at the end of that tunnel that, dealers didn't care as much about picking consumers' cars up because they didn't have the staffing for it. And not everybody was as passionate about finding more revenue as I was. And I did not realize that when I left. And researching and asking the people that are going to be paying you is really huge. And I don't think I did enough of that when we launch that first product.
So let's fast forward to today. One of the cool things about the work that I do, we get to work with companies in all different industries solving all kinds of different problems. And there's a company that came through our accelerator program that helped find kids. It was shocking to me when I first learned that at a typical zoo or amusement park, about 50 kids get lost every day. The good news is they all get found eventually, right? But that's a pretty dramatic thing. You're working with keys and with cars, and talk to us about the importance of keeping track of all of that.
Well, during COVID, there was a chip shortage, and during the chip shortage, there was an inventory level issue at dealerships, meaning that they had very little inventory, but prior to COVID, they had a ton of inventory, and now the inventory levels are back or better than they were pre-COVID. But one of the issues that they have at dealerships is there's so many people that work there at a car dealership. I mean, some of them have hundreds of employees at one location, because you've got salespeople, you've got service advisors, you've got technicians, you have sales managers, F&I people, detail people, and all of those people have a hand in servicing a customer, or taking care of a customer, or taking care of a vehicle, or getting it where it needs to go in order to serve a customer. And in that process, there's a lot of keys switch hands a lot. Cars move in different places a lot, and not everybody's always on the same page. So when I was at the dealership, I would hear this question daily, multiple times: "Have you seen this car? Do you know where this key's at? I'm trying to deliver it to a customer. I'm trying to pull this car into the bay, but I can't find the car. I'm trying to sell the car, but it's not here. Where is it? I can't find it." I heard that all day. Pretty much 5, 6 times a day. I said all day, but maybe 5, 6 times a day. But what happens is, when you get asked that question, managers there, the people that write us the check, are the ones that are, hearing these things. And then they have to get up from their desk or whatever they're doing and go on the manhunt to try to find the key or car with the person that's also looking at. And just not efficient. It's just not efficient. And then at the same time, there's so much data that's not being captured on location. Today, everything's based upon point and click inside of a dealer management system that they use. So if a car pulls into the shop, it's dependent on a technician clicking a button to say he's working on it. So it's essentially garbage in, garbage out data. But with location, you're not dependent upon somebody clicking a button to move it to a certain location. We know it's in the shop, and we know how long it's been there, based on the sensor that's there in the location where the car is at. So, collecting that type of data and providing that insight back to the dealership is huge. Like, one of our big KPIs is RO creation time to shop entry. So when you arrive at a dealership, how long does it take your car to actually make it into the shop? And if you were to ask service managers in the automotive space, do they know that? Do they know that number today? Probably 99% of them, or 100% of them, would say no. It's essentially impossible to track unless you have a timer, and you're timing every car that's, sitting out in the parking lot before it makes it into the shop. So the sensors that we put on cars are not just location tracking sensors. They also act as little timers as well. So when they enter zones, they kind of, count the time as they enter and leave.
It's interesting when I survey the overall tech landscape. You look at the first decade or so of this century, everything was about SaaS, pure software. Be extremely low cost startup. All you need is some people, some cloud services, a few laptops. You can create a highly valuable, high margin business. But then the biggest of the big, the Amazons, the Microsofts, the Googles, et cetera, in this software space started buying up hardware companies and started investing in hardware. You have both hardware and software. Is one a leader for the other? How do they come together? Is it a necessary evil to have hardware, or is it a strategic advantage? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, great question. So we kind of accidentally stumbled into hardware. We were buying hardware from a third party over in China, and they had terrible customer service. And we said, we're dependent upon them to help us sell and serve customers that want this product. And it's taken them a month to get back to us after we email them or call them, or you couldn't even call them. You had to email them, and that doesn't make sense for us. So if we're going to solve this problem the way we say we are, we've either got to find another solution or another company that could sell it to us, which there wasn't another one that was, reliable, So we had to build our own hardware. And we hired an electrical engineer, and Peter, my co-founder, he's an electrical engineer as well. So we hired another electrical engineer, and together both of them helped develop our own outdoor solar gateways, as well as our compact indoor gateways as well. And these gateways scan the beacons, the sensors that are on cars and keys as they move through different parts of the zone, and then that data is pushed up to the cloud. And one of the biggest competitive advantages now for us is that we do build our own hardware. One, because we're using brand new modern 2024 chips and technology, and we also write our own firmware, which gives us a huge advantage, location, on location accuracy. And then two, we're not reliant on that Chinese company to, get back to us 30 days from now. Our competitors in the space buy from that same company that was taking us 30 days to get a response back from. So we don't have to, we know the challenges they face with them because we dealt with them too. And it cut our costs down a fifth. So it cost us a fifth of the price that we were paying for it when we were buying it from China. We were, landed, one of those units landed was about $155 from China. And a dealership may need outdoor gateways about 100, and I mean, they may need about 30 of them at a dealership, 30 or 40 of them outside. And you're talking about $155 a piece. And now, we're building our own hardware for a fifth of that price, which
So it's
is a
interesting. So yeah,
competitive.
that's counter to the normal kind of storyline about, oh, you go overseas for low cost stuff. It's lower cost, it's higher quality, and it creates competitive advantage because it allows you to provide services that frankly the off-the-shelf stuff couldn't do anyway.
Right. And we would never have access to change any of the firmware. And there's so much that you can do with that. Like we can cut these things off at certain times, or scan for more devices rather than what their standard firmware would scan for. So there's just so much that we can control with our own. And then building our own beacons as well as a something that we're looking at and in the process of doing enough research to figure out how we can, reduce costs there and provide better value to our dealers.
What's next? Where do you see Bailey in the future?
Well, we have a lot of stuff in our backlog, like a ton of stuff in our backlog, but it's really about, efficiency, overall efficiency. And that's one of those words that, it's a sexy word to talk about, efficiency, but a lot of people don't know exactly what it is, exactly what is that, when you're talking about dealerships. And what they, a more recognized term could be turn more hours. How do you turn more hours? How do you collect more money? That's by being more efficient. So when we look at our business, we look at things that we, value that we can add to the dealer, like, for example, maybe it's cameras that look at how long it took to wait on a customer, in the service lane. Did the customer have to come inside and meet us, or did we meet them outside at the car? Did we check the car out thoroughly before the customer left? Meaning, The service advisor met the customer at the car. They did a walk around on the car. They had good rapport with the customer. How many cars, went through the service lane today? How many cars went into the shop today? What was our average time cars were in the shop versus how many hours we billed? Things like that that provide value. So providing KPIs like that to the dealer will be helpful, as well as logistically. When I find a car, now that I've found it, maybe I need to move it somewhere. Who do I assign to move it? Is that somebody there at the dealership, or is this a third-party company that is going to move it for me? So dealerships, they dealer trade cars from one location to another location. And that's a process in itself that they go through. And add in that type of functionality to what we do, maybe something that we add into our service, later on down the road. But who knows what the next 2 years, 3 years, 4 years hold. But we won't be too romantic with the product to change when we need to.
You've proven that time and again. I think the focus that you just described is what I've seen and why I've seen you become so successful. And it's that, it's that focus on the value. Not thinking of value as am I more efficient, but I am creating real-time automation, not just of your data, but through that business innovation of your cars, of your keys, of your people, of everything in that operation. That's really quite fascinating. And I think what this whole IoT world who is all about.
Yeah, and when we first started, we were not an IoT company. We were just a mobile app, we've become IoT hardcore, and I think when you're looking at new features or benefits that you provide to a customer, they don't care about the feature. They care about what does it do for me? Like what is that thing that you're building? How does that make me look like a hero? And you've got to get feedback from the people that are using the product, or feedback from the people that will be using your product as you build it, on how do you make them look like the hero? How do you save them time, or make them more money, or make them less stressed? And the only way you can do that is to talk to them consistently, because sometimes those things change. But you got to talk to enough people, and that would be the biggest piece of advice I'd give anybody. Before we build any feature in our product, we survey enough of them to make sure this is the right thing, because I've personally wasted money and time building stuff people didn't care for, and the main reason was because I didn't survey enough people. I didn't talk to enough people. And if you can shortcut or bypass some of those things by talking to people, you definitely need to or should.
Great advice. Thanks so much for being on the program. If there's folks out there listening that would like to learn more about Bailey or find ways to engage, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Oh yeah, you can go to our website, getbailey.com. And then we've got some, you can book a call there if you want to learn more, or you can email me at marcus@getbailey.com.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for being out there. We'll get Leo's agent on the phone, see about recording that future documentary. Let's plan on having you come back in a couple of years. I want to hear how your services will help find all the self-driving cars at some point
Oh.
down the road.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. You never know where we might be headed.
Never know. All right. Well, thanks again.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Riot Underground Podcast. The Riot Underground Podcast is created and produced by Riot Studios with music by Scott Jackson. Riot is a nonprofit focused on economic development through the Internet of Things, or IoT. By capturing emerging markets, producing educational events and conferences, and accelerating startups, creating IoT opportunities locally, nationally, and globally. Learn how to engage by visiting us at riot.org or sending us an email at info@riot.org.